Welcome to Season 11, Episode 27 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday, the 11th of September, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are the Ubuntu Podcast Dream Team. It's Alan.
Hello.
And Martin.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir, indeed. It's getting dark, so it's definitely nighttime. Alan, what have you been doing since last we spoke?
I have been moonlighting on another podcast.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Splitter.
Yeah. My good friend, Stuart Langridge, pinged me and said, hey, we can't find anyone else. Would you like to be on Bad Voltage?
Well, there's an endorsement.
while Jeremy's away. No, he was very kind and said lovely things to me to butter me up. And yeah, it was quite interesting going on that and doing very much the same as we're doing right now, reading news and
but with more swearing.
Quite a lot more swearing, actually. Yeah, it's quite liberating being able to say rudy words. Yeah, it's quite funny, actually.
Yeah, it was a good episode. I enjoyed listening to that.
I'm about halfway through. It gave me some chuckles in the car.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. Don't plan on doing it again soon, but then I have to be asked, because it's not something you can go muscle in and just turn up like some other podcasts. You actually have to be asked when people are away, and so I did.
Excellent. Martin, how about you?
I've also been moonlighting on another podcast.
Oh, I see what this is. What's happening?
See you later,
Mark. Just me, like, keeping it pure, holding down the fort while you two swan off. And
yeah,
yeah.
No, similar to Alan, there was someone was away on the TechSnap podcast, so I stepped in for an episode and joined Wes to talk about information security issues on the TechSnap podcast.
Ooh.
Excellent.
Yeah. But yes. Having done the TechSnap podcast, I've also finally pulled my finger out and I've switched to using DuckDuckGo full time.
Ah, welcome.
DuckDuckGo.
DuckDuckGo.
You're a DuckDuckGo user, Mark.
I've used DuckDuckGo for years now.
Yeah, so I've tried in the past and it never quite gelled, and this time it's sticking with me. So I've figured out the secret sauce to make it work, and I'm pretty happy with it.
You've got the hang of the exclamation marks, yeah.
Yeah, I have found. In fact, there's a Bang SCNR, which is a Snapcraft store lookup query, which is handy.
Yes, I use it a lot for doing things like looking things up on the Star Trek wiki. And
right.
And there's all sorts of odd things like that, where there's like, you know, really it's useful for like searching the search on another website.
Yes.
As well as searching the whole index as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to keep going with that. I think it's working well for me.
Excellent. Well, on that note, on with the show. And now it's time for some news. And first in the news this week, Alan, what's happened?
Trend Micro, purveyors of fine security software, well, questionable security software in some cases, for multiple platforms, have been found stealing user data.
Ooh, what sort of data?
Mostly your browser history.
Okay.
Not your browser history, because I would imagine you're not running Trend Micro applications on an Apple Mac.
You would be correct in right. that assumption.
But some people were. And one okay. person who was did a bit of investigation and rummaged around inside the app and used an interesting application called Charles, which I've used before, which allows you to peer into HTTPS requests and see what's going on.
Okay.
And, yes. and he reverse engineered what was going on, and he discovered that the applications, which are under the guise of helping you with security on your Mac, were yes. actually reaching over to your Firefox bookmarks and, sorry, browser Ooh. History, your Chrome browser history and your Safari browser history, then zipping them all up and sending them off to Trend Micro for them to have a good old look at.
Oh, how nice. I mean, you might expect that a piece of software like that might, you know, interact with your browser to see which websites you're going to and maybe flag up potential hazardous websites or things you're downloading.
In a real-time fashion, yes, like while you're doing it, but not going and globbing up all the stuff that was there before you ever installed the application.
Absolutely, yes, that's not rude. On, is it?
Mm. But apparently, it zips it up and sends it off to their servers, and they password protect the zip for a bit of additional security. And the password was discovered to be the word no virus, which is quite cute.
The zip password could have been all the words in the English language, because the zip password security is just atrocious and well crackable these days.
Amazing.
And well, I mean, even the binary, the application binary, shells out to the zip command. Like, it's not even doing it in anything other than shelling out to the zip command with like minus P and then the virus, the password. It's quite ridiculous.
When I first read this story, I just saw the headline go past and I just dismissed it as, oh, Apple being, you know, overreaching again inside the store. But this doesn't cover Trend Micro in glory, really, does it? It does
not really.
No.
The security researcher who found this and posted screenshots of emails that he sent to Apple. So he actually notified Apple to say, hey, yo, there's this app that's doing naughty things. And by the way, there's a whole bunch of other apps from the same people. Apple have removed those apps from the store. So that doesn't look good for Trend Micro.
Ooh, wow.
And Trend Micro have responded that it was a security feature.
Of course it was.
Yep.
Do they take your privacy very seriously?
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, they encrypt the zip file with a password of no virus, Mark.
Absolutely. That gives me so much confidence. They also said that the data collected was explicitly identified to the customer in the data collection policy and is highlighted to the user during the install, which I think means it was in a locked cabinet in the basement.
Yeah, behind it's in a massive EULA that nobody reads.
Beware of the leopard.
Yeah.
They also said the browser history data was uploaded to a US-based server. Very conscious there, because some people suggested that it was those filthy Chinese that got hold of these zip files. But apparently, no, it was these filthy Americans who got hold of these zip files, hosted by Amazon and managed and controlled by Trend Micro, which doesn't make it any better at all.
No, it doesn't matter where.
That's just completely irrelevant data.
That's just, yes, we did do that. Yes, you're right.
And this is how.
Yes. So, yes, that's my news item for today.
Brilliant. Martin, what have you been reading?
So I found a story that Intel has confirmed that it intends to support the VESA adaptive sync protocol in its future GPUs. So I suppose this needs a little bit of an introduction.
It does. I know what all those words mean, but yeah, not when put together.
Okay, so the first thing is that Intel have announced that they're going to start making discrete graphics cards maybe next year or the year after, to compete with the likes of Nvidia and AMD. So not just the on-chip integrated stuff, but proper plug it in the PCI Express bus, you know, graphics cards.
Only about 10 years late, but good.
Well, I think I've lost count. Is this the third or fourth time they've had a stab at this? But anyway, they're doing it again.
Wish them luck. Yes.
And the VESA adaptive sync, this is a mechanism by which GPUs can have perceived performance improvement by being able to refresh the display at the number of frames the GPU is capable of displaying to the screen. So, right, you know, traditionally, yes, you either have it displaying as fast as the GPU can do it and you get potentially tearing, you know, video tearing, yeah, or you turn video sync on, or vertical sync on, sorry, and yeah, you're locked to 60 frames per second, regardless of how fast your graphics card is. And these adaptive sync technologies enable you to send it to the screen as fast as the GPU is doing, but it's fluctuating. So if it can only do this scene at 35, but the next scene at 110, it will, you know, vary the refresh rate.
Do people notice this? Is it renowned, this technology, as making the game smoother and people feel like they're getting higher frame rates?
I've never seen it in person, but the technology reviewers I've seen reviewing this say, yes, this makes a significant difference to the perception of the smoothness of the game and, you know, how immersive it is, because...
And in the giant mountain of video cards and things that you have, do any of yours support this? Or is it not something, yes, that the video card has to support? Where does the support come from?
The support is in the monitors, and this is where this gets interesting.
Oh, okay.
So the NVIDIA technology is called G-Sync, and that comes at a price premium of $100 to $150 per monitor. And AMD's solution is called FreeSync, which is free and is now an open standard backed by VESA.
Okay.
And Intel have opted to support AMD's FreeSync or the Visa Adaptive Sync implementation in its discrete graphics cards in the future.
They didn't opt to go with the one that gives their competitors $100 to $150
indeed,
for each monitor. Okay,
indeed. Interesting, man. But yeah, I've found this whole G-Sync and FreeSync thing deeply irritating because I've been thinking about buying a new monitor, but your monitor choice is now based on what GPU you want to plug into it. And I have GPUs from both camps, you know, in these external enclosures. So I don't want to be limited by whatever the refresh technology in the monitor is. I just want to be able to use both. And the current...
So, sorry, just to make sure I actually understand correctly what this is doing. So basically, this is rather than your monitor refreshing at the rate it refreshes and your graphics card either matching that or sending stuff as fast as it can, your graphics card now controls the refresh rate of your monitor.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Are there no monitors that support both technologies, given the AMD one is free?
There are not currently. Okay. There are far more FreeSync-based monitors, the AMD technology, because the current generation games consoles from Sony and Microsoft both have integrated AMD graphics solutions. So consequently, they use FreeSync. So the G-Sync stuff is, there's far fewer of them on the market, and they're considerably more expensive at the entry-level price bracket. But hopefully this now, with Intel's backing, will move people in the direction of, or move NVIDIA in the direction of supporting FreeSync, because the thing is FreeSync is a software only solution, so there's no reason why NVIDIA couldn't support it today. They just choose not to. But hopefully this is another
Betamax mini disc versus CD. I wonder which one you were going to go for there.
Yes, but it's another format war that's hopefully now, if Intel deliver discrete GPUs that are really decent, hopefully this will start to turn the tide and we will have one standard to work towards and an open one at that.
Intel are not keen to be the Video 2000 of monitor sync technology.
Let's hope not.
Excellent. Next up, game developer Cheesness has written about the history of Linux gaming. So this was an article that's been prompted, I think, mainly by the
release of
Proton. Yeah. And in it, so Cheesness gives a bit of their background about they've worked with various game companies and been involved in various Linux communities over the years. And based on that experience, gives quite a nuanced view of, a good explanation of what Proton actually is and the parts it comprises, a bit of a history of the Linux gaming market and where sort of companies have come and gone in porting games to Linux, and a really sort of a good nuanced critique of Proton and why it might be good and why it might be bad.
It's pretty comprehensive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoy reading. In fact, I haven't even finished reading it because it's so long.
It is a long piece, but it's worth it.
I like this. It's quite a deep think piece that's not just superficial and, you know, whoa, Proton is bad, or yay, Proton is great. It's got some nice history in there. Really worth a read.
Yeah, well, considering that this is an article that came out a few weeks after the Proton announcement, clearly something they've been thinking on before they decided to write their thoughts down.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's some good points there. Like, you know, while it's good that, you know, more games are playable on Linux from a user point of view, it's sort of looking at how that might affect the market, how, you know, game developers are kind of encouraged to leave the, like, whether it works under Proton or not, up to Steam rather than actually supporting users. But at the same time, Valve is quite good at continuing to maintain its open source projects, and it is encouraging game developers to work on technologies like Vulkan, which make it easier to do cross-platform games. So yeah, it's definitely not just a reactionary sort of thing. You know, we saw sort of quite a lot of celebrations and quite a lot of gnashing of teeth when it was actually announced, so it's good to see something well informed and well written to actually break this down.
Do Valve actually have any items in their history of doing something bad, specifically targeting Linux? I mean, is there any prior art we can say, well, look what they did then? like
not specifically Linux, but they can't count to three.
No, I appreciate that, and I don't want to go there. I'm talking specifically about Linux. Like,
not that I'm aware of.
They brought their client to Linux. They ported into in-house games.
Yeah.
They ported Source Engine, I believe.
Yeah.
That was ported.
They hired everyone that's involved in the graphics stack.
Right. And they've enabled all the things that are enabled in the Windows client are in the Linux client. So you can stream games in either direction. The Steam controllers work on Linux. You know, there's so many good things they've done. I hate this whole jumping on the bandwagon and saying this is all terrible. Like, they seem quite thoughtful, Valve.
Yeah. they put a load of effort in, because in 2012, they started courting developers ahead of the, you know, the grand unveiling of the Linux client for Steam, to encourage them to port their games and to incentivize them to do it with increased marketing exposure and what have you. So, you know, at every level, they've done everything that they can really to build Linux as a gaming platform.
It's quite amazing. We got early builds of the Steam client at Canonical before it became publicly available, and we were testing it out on whatever version of Ubuntu it was back then, and it was such happy times that we couldn't talk about, because it was all under NDA. It was that was great. Ah, dear.
Excellent. Well, we've got time for one last quick story, Alan. So what else has been going on?
Yeah, Amazon have launched a new device. It's the latest in the line of Alexa-equipped lady cylinders.
Oh, you've said it.
This one has an interesting new feature. It's got a camera, but it's not for meetings or selfies. It's a 5-megapixel shooter, and it's to take full-length photos of the owner or passers-by, one assumes, to offer them fashion advice.
Just pop it on your kitchen window,
Sal. Yes, exactly, to offer fashion advice.
I absolutely don't need a robot in the kitchen giving me fashion advice.
So if you're not sure if that new belt goes with that dress or whether that really isn't your colour, then you can pony up 120 big ones to Amazon for a camera on a stick that further reduces your existence to pixels on a screen and data on an Amazon server somewhere.
Great.
I'm not going to buy one.
And on that note, that's all the news. And now it's time for community news and spurious rumours of events. First up in the community news this week, Sean Davis has written about the Zubuntu development update for September 2018.
Oh, what are the highlights?
There are updates to the theme and general appearance stuff in the file manager and the task manager, more progress towards GTK3 support, display settings profiles, and improvements on the look and feel based on the GNOME 2 HIG, whatever that is.
It's the human interface guidelines from GNOME 2, which also Mate adhere to now.
I see. Are there not more up-to-date human interface guidelines, or are those just very good ones?
They're well-researched ones. You know, sit on the back of decades of design theory, and that's what shaped those particular human interface guidelines, and they're the ones that sort of frame the traditional desktop metaphor that we're familiar with.
Right.
But Sean's been putting these updates out every month, and they're a really good read, very detailed. If you're an XFCE or Zubuntu user, then you should really subscribe to Sean's blog to see all of the work that he's doing there. I have to say, XFCE is really looking very sharp these days, and the gentle march towards GTK3 is looking very impressive indeed.
Yeah, I listen to a few Linux YouTubers, and I hear some of their guests and some of the people in the chat talking about which distro they use, and I'm hearing a fair number of people still running Zubuntu, not necessarily Zubuntu, but XFCE specifically. So there's still a market out there for XFCE and Zubuntu. So it's really good.
Manjaro's default desktop environment is XFCE.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome.
Cool. What's next, Martin?
Well, I saw on OMG Ubuntu that they talked about the mock-ups for GNOME Center that there was a design sprint for within Canonical and the GNOME team a little while ago. And Alan, you were actually at this sprint, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah, this was in the London office. We invited a bunch of people to come to the office, and we the goal was to create some mock-ups and give some design input to the GNOME software team. Richard Hughes joined us in the office, and we brainstormed a whole bunch of stuff, and we ran stuff past him, like what would be acceptable to upstream and what wouldn't, and you know, how can we integrate this with, and be conscious of the fact that GNOME software is used to install lots of different types of packages, so we have to you know, accept that there's metadata in different forms and all that kind of stuff. And we came up with some mock-ups. In fact, one of my mock-ups is in Joey's article. I didn't realize they were going to get submitted to so you can see my
fame at last,
my
scribbles, yeah, which I'm quite proud of that, actually. It's quite a nice mock-up. I quite like it. But Matthew Paul Thomas has been leading this from the Canonical side and has filed an issue upstream on GitLab. This was always the intention, is to put this all on GitLab so that we can do the discussion in the open, and they can accept or not the designs, and people can work on implementing them.
Great.
Now, in the article, Joey sort of positions the argument that why is there this effort going into a graphical storefront, because nobody uses it. Everybody uses the command line.
Yeah, we hear that a lot. We hear people say, nobody uses that, I just use apt. And among a small percentage of nerds, that's true. But we know that actual real people open GNOME software on a regular basis and go and install software. And you know, if you have a popular application and it happens to get featured on the front page of GNOME software, that will drive users to install the application. That's a fact. And people are doing that by discovering software in GNOME software. So it makes sense for us to make that a better experience, which is why this whole design sprint has happened, to make it more pleasant for users to discover software and install software.
Excellent. What's next, Alan?
Next up, there's a new podcast to listen to. Yes, it's by Alex Murray, who works on the security team at Canonical, and it's called the Ubuntu Security Podcast.
Yes, we had a listen to this in the car on the way back from OgCam, didn't we?
We did, and it was very enjoyable. I really wasn't sure when we first started listening, because in my past experience of listening to security podcasts, they can be quite dry, but this one was brilliant. It was really accessible, easy to listen to, plenty of super content. I strongly recommend people listen to it, whether you're interested in security or not. There's loads of interesting stuff in there. So
yeah, there
it's
is.
Worth a listen.
It's only a 10-minute podcast once a week. Alex keeps it light and interesting and explains these complicated topics very clearly. And he also mentions at the end of every podcast that the Ubuntu security team are hiring. So I'm going to echo his call for candidates to apply for positions as either the Ubuntu security team manager or another security engineer on the Ubuntu security team.
It was pleasant that while we were driving along, the car went completely quiet as we were listening to Alex, and that meant that Martin drove the correct direction every turn. Let's call back to a previous episode you might want to go and listen to.
You can walk next year.
And another good thing is that even though he does keep the stuff light and accessible, that he also produces incredibly thorough, dense show notes. So if you want to really dig into the particular CVEs and bug reports and patches and so on, all of the information's there if you want to know the detail too.
What's next, Mark?
I was just about to tell you. There is Mir news.
Is this Mir's not dead
news? Mir is not officially dead.
Good.
I mean, officially or unofficially. In no way, officially or unofficially, is Mir dead.
No.
In fact, it has a new website.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, it's quite pretty.
It does. Mir-server.io.
Oh, it has to be IO, didn't it?
Yeah, the aforementioned design team have clearly had a hand in this. It looks
yes,
rather
it is
nice.
Pretty. Yes. And there's diagrams and
blog
information
and
things like that. Yes. And there's also an EGMDE snap, which I think that's the Mir desktop shell environment thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an example Mir-based desktop shell that they're now tracking as a snap in the Edge channel. So they're tracking all of the Mir development there with a view to making it easier to get up and running with that.
Oh, great.
And the UBports developers have also created an image of, is it a Sony Z5? Is that who makes the Z5? Yeah. Which has Mir 0.32 built into Ubuntu Touch, and they're hoping that they're going to release this across all of their images in January next year.
Wow.
Ooh, excellent. So does UBports already use Mir, but this is a newer version?
Yeah, it's always used Mir because that's what Unity 8 was built for and on.
Ah, of course.
So the other way around, Mir was built for Unity 8. And so, yeah, it's good stuff. Not dead. Great.
Yes. And finally, events. We don't really have any events to announce, but I can reveal a rumor that OCCamp will definitely be happening next year.
Definitely.
We don't know when or where.
It's a rumor that it will definitely be happening next year.
Yes.
Excellent.
I hope my rumor comes true.
I hope it does too.
Well, make it come true, Mark.
Be the change you want to see.
And on that note, that's all the community news and events.
Are you listening to us on our Roku channel? Help other Roku users find the Ubuntu podcast and learn more about open source by giving our channel a star rating.
And that's all for episode 27.
Mm.
It certainly is. Rel.
It's worth mentioning at this point some new and interesting developments that have happened in the Ubuntu podcast production, which you may not have noticed. We've recently been assisted in our post-production by the wonderful Joe Ressington, who has given us some of his very valuable time to edit and produce and master the show in glorious mono. Stereo.
Stereo.
You don't do podcasts in Dublin.
And so we would love to thank Joe. And I think there's more news on that. You might want to have a listen to the latest episode of Linux Unplugged, because there's more information about how this all came about in there.
Excellent.
Yes. Thanks so very much, Joe.
We're trying not to give him too hard a time in editing by
talking over each other. You missed a trick there, Martin.
Oh, dear. Right. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing Chromium OS, and we're going to bring you a command line love. So see you then. Bye.